This is June 6, 2009, and this is a Pathwork teleconference on the spiritual meaning of relationship. And as I was chatting before we started, it is useful sometimes before such a lecture is presented to have some level of background of the Pathwork lecture, because if you simply presented a lecture on relationship, people would bring their social understanding and their personal understandings of relationship to the discussion. But I emphasize the title of this lecture as the spiritual significance of relationship, because the Pathwork materials look at relationship differently than we may look at it in our daily lives. So I'm going to digress for a moment and go into that and kind of expand that a little bit. One very wonderful lecture, among many, is Pathwork Lecture 233, which is The Power of the Word. And when you read and understand that lecture, what it says is that words carry energy. They're not simply words. They represent something. And words also evolve in society. So a word that meant one thing 50, 100 years ago can shift until it means something almost completely opposite 50 or 100 years later. When we emotionally load a word, we basically distort it a bit so that it starts meaning something differently than it originally meant. So I have developed a slight practice of an online dictionary, and when I'm not quite sure that we're on track, when I work with people or when I'm discussing something, I go to this dictionary and look it up. And sometimes I am quite surprised to find out that how we are addressing the word right now is not the dictionary definition. Now, you can say, but that's only the dictionary, but dictionaries are updated over time. So when a word becomes heavily loaded on a social level, so that even a modern dictionary, one published 5 years ago, does not reflect this emotional load, what that tells me is that it's like there's a pressure on the fabric of society to indicate that something has a different meaning than it used to have. And where that is useful is when we are in distortion about meaning. So here's my point. I looked up relationship, and there were four definitions. The first was the condition or fact of being related. Connection or association. Simple reality, a simple fact. Definition number four was a romantic or sexual involvement. Yet the reality today is that when we speak of relationship, we are speaking of the fourth definition rather than the first. And so what I like to do is differentiate the word. I accept the emotional loading that we have on a need for intimate relationship, but I want to differentiate it so that we can talk about relationship on many levels. And in a joke sense, what I do is I call the romantic or sexual involvement relationship the big R, and the simple condition or fact of being related, connected, or associated, little r. That is not to diminish either one, but simply to differentiate that relationship happens every day, every hour, every minute. You cannot avoid relationship. And in the lecture, the guide talks about intimate relationship, meaning romantic or sexual involvement, as the greatest growth opportunity we have. And the guide talks about periods of solitude or loneliness as being important places to integrate and to go to as a counterbalance. In other words, there's nothing wrong with not being in relationship, because you are still in relationship. only in a different way. So being out of relationship means you're out of the big R and you're still in the little R. And in the little R, you relieve the pressure a little bit. It's not so intense. It gives you an opportunity. It's like stepping back a little bit or taking a pause from the hard work of personal growth. You do not escape it. But there is a genuine need for reflection sometimes. So I differentiate that because when we say one word but we mean a different word, we can become confused. So when we say, I want to be in relationship, I like to emphasize we are all in relationship. And emphasize that what we may be asking for is a deeper, more intense opportunity for self-growth. Even if we don't use those words, that's what happens in relationship. So I wanted to differentiate that because relationship as a fact means that you will never be out of relationship. And the guide starts off this lecture by saying, relationship represents the greatest challenge for the individual. And from the spiritual point of view, it is about individual growth and unification. So in terms of unification, my point in expanding this understanding of the word relationship is that we remember the unitive state. We know that we are all one. But on the human plane, individually, in our own skin, we don't always feel this sense of oneness. In an intimate relationship, in a paradoxical way, we can most intensely feel connected to everything. And we can also have that experience in relationship with others. So what I like to do in these lectures is I like to start off from a place of starting from the positive. And the positive here, from the spiritual standpoint, is that we remember unity. We remember the unitive state. We know about oneness, and we crave it. Just like in biology, there are instincts and drives that lead us, whether or not we agree with them intellectually, spiritually. There are instincts and drives, and those drives are for growth. Those drives are to connect with the unitive, to be a part of the one. And yet we all start from an individual state. So I've spoken before about the three spheres of consciousness. So the unitive is the sphere of spirit. But we don't live there. We know about it, but on this earth plane, we are human. We are not angels. We are not divine beings and spirits. We're human beings. We have names and places, and we have professions, and it feels very finite. That's not the spiritual reality, but that is our reality. So the unitive state is out there, and we remember it because we came from it. And that's important because in these lectures, we're not talking about psychology, and we're not talking about fixing problems. We're talking about a larger perspective, a perspective where we come from spirit and we're going back to spirit, and this is our opportunity to grow, to expand, to transform and purify. So we start from the space that in the three spheres of consciousness is called the individual self sphere. We start from the infant state of me and mine, right, wrong, trying to figure out how the world works. And it's a child consciousness. There's nothing wrong with child consciousness. It is a stage of development. When we talk about the spiritual meaning of relationship, we are talking about a process that is a bridge between the individual self-sphere of mine and the unitive sphere of all of us. So to some degree, heaven on earth, place, where we are in deep, honest relationship with at least one other person. And what the Patrick lectures say is that if you are in deep, honest relationship with one person, you are to some degree in relationship with all. So I joke about that because when I teach unity and duality, dualistic thinking is all or nothing. And to some extent, the paradoxical joke about unity is that there's a little quality of all or nothing there too. That once you get it, once you understand that being honest with one person allows you the possibility to be honest with everyone, and being dishonest with one person, even if that person is yourself, may disallow honesty with others. So on a joke sense, there is a kind of an all or nothing here. And the encouragement is that in intimate relationship, we may focus on one person, but in being honest and open with one single person, we actually move through into a deeper state of connection with all. So in the talk about the spiritual meaning of relationship, yes, we do talk about intimate relationships because they are the place that growth happens fastest. It is the most intense place that we work. It can be the most painful place that we work, in the sense that it brings all our stuff to us. It brings our distortions out. Proximity to another person, the intimacy with another person, is a place where we cannot hide. And while that may be painful when we are trying to hide something, it is also a glorious opportunity to find these areas of distortion and hiding and heal them. So the next section that the guide talks about in this lecture is that the process of unification, which involves relationship, starts with us. It does not truly start with the other. So I want to describe here a place where when we are first reaching out from a place of child consciousness, you don't become mature overnight. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen biologically. It doesn't happen socially. And it doesn't happen spiritually. Maturity takes time. Spiritual maturity very often takes decades and decades. It's not just a matter of turning 21 and being biologically and socially fit to enter society. Spiritual maturity is a deeper process that takes living life for a while so that we can find out who we are and how we interact and get a better knowing of ourselves. And in that knowing of ourselves, that's what the guide is talking about when he uses the term unification. So in working with ourselves, there are baby steps of making connection that happen when you have a best friend, when you're 5 or 7. It happens when you're an adolescent and you have a group of individuals that you bond with, social clubs, groups, cliques. Even if they're in distortion, they are an attempt by you as an individual and others as individuals to come into relationship, to bond, to share. And again, there is nothing wrong with this, and it does manifest the level of development that we are at. So at 15, when we may be full of distortions and full of adolescent hormones, you get a clique of people that might be snotty, they might be clubby, they might be exclusionary, they might be racist, they might need to protect their own image of themselves by downgrading other groups of people and trying to find a sense of security about their own being. That is simply a manifestation of the level of development of that group. The important thing to remember is that's not the end. It's a phase that almost everyone moves through. Then when we go into our 20s, we go out into society, and we are starting to interact and develop deeper senses of deeper values because we normally leave home in our 20s sometimes. And we go out and we try and we experiment and we explore. And once again, in this phase, naturally we will manifest distortions that are in us. You cannot help but do that. But this is also not the end. So in relationship, while it may be true that some people meet the person of their dreams and marry or commit and stay committed their whole life from a very, very early age, it is also true that a large number of people do not find a lifetime mate very, very early in life. And this is where the interest in the lecture on relationship comes in. Now, the lecture also speaks to long-term relationships, because a long-term relationship is a huge adventure, needing constant refreshment and needing to look at what's going on and to feel all the feelings that come up in this intimate exposure of oneself to another. And yet it does tend to feel more painful when we go through what is known nowadays as serial monogamy, where we seem to flounder, where we go through a relationship with one person that fails and then a relationship with another person that fails, and we feel like we're stumbling through life and we're not finding what our heart desires. What I'm describing here is our heart desires unity. And it may be true that in interim relationships, not knowing, of course, what the answer is, not knowing what the end of your life is like or when you might find a person that really does meet you, but in these interim relationships, these are extremely wonderful opportunities. That's bad phrasing, but these are great opportunities for self-development, for self-realization, for understanding ourselves. And what the guide says is that you cannot be realized with another until you apply that realization to yourself. So the Patrick lectures, even in the discussion on relationship, focus very much on us. Because if we cannot be honest, it is very likely that we will manifest dishonesty in a relationship. And when you manifest negativity, negativity manifests to you. When we understand ourselves, when we find unification with ourselves, when we find an understanding of ourselves, then there is an opportunity to share that with the other. And the possibility exists of a kind of a stair step. So I described earlier where you might have a 5-year-old best friend and a 7-year-old best friend and a 14-year-old best friend and a 25-year-old best friend. In relationship, even if you are paired with the same person for your entire life, this same stair step may happen of your growth and their growth, and your growth and their growth. And the only distinction is that it may happen with a single person rather than with successive partners. But either way, relationship is a fact. The point of relationship is growth. And in growth, there will always be a place where things don't fit, and then they fit back together. Just as if you had I study a lot of biology, that when a bone grows in a child, the phrase growing pains is actually, it's like teething in a baby. It's an actual process where the bones have grown and the ligaments have not. And so there's a sense of pain in the joint of a young growing child that is not easy to identify, and it's a simple process that the bones are growing and then the ligaments grow and then that tension relaxes. The same thing happens to us when we grow as spiritual beings. We don't grow in perfect sequence. We may grow a little bit over here and a little bit over here, and once again, it's a kind of a stair step back and forth. And if you have a partner who is someone that you can work with, whatever that means to you, then the possibility is there for you to grow, but not enough so that that person cannot stay with you. And then that person grows, and then you follow and grow. And so it's a hand-in-hand growth process. But again, nowadays, for very many people, that process involves a shifting of partners, which is very painful. That's what I mostly address when I talk to people about relationships. The guide says that intimate, romantic, and sexual relationship is the greatest challenge for an individual. And the reason he gives is that relationship with others is a mirror of one's own state and thus a direct help to one's self-purification. So relationship is the greatest challenge because in relationship we are being invited to face our own distortions. We are being asked to face the places in us that are not honest, that are not real, that are not willing. And when you are nose to nose with another person who sees you very, very deeply, it is very difficult to hide. That person sees you in places where you're not prepared to cover up. So when you go outside to society, you may dress more carefully, you may act with more propriety. In an intimate relationship, that's hard to do 24/7. So what happens is we are more honestly ourselves, both in our gifts and our divine wonderful being, and also in our stages of immaturity. And what I'm trying to build here is that this is a positive even in the pain, even in the difficulty, even in the trauma of feeling rejected by another person. There is an invitation here for you to look at what is the grain of truth? What am I doing that is not in distortion, that has prompted the reaction from the other person? So again, looping back around, unification with another starts with ourselves. When I read the lectures or prepare for them, I get surprised. I read the lectures, and even though I think I'm familiar with them, I get caught short because I find a phrase in them that I have forgotten. And I go through a momentary glitch of saying, oh my God, you can't teach this. You don't know what you're talking about. You can't even read the lecture. You can't even remember all this stuff. That's a momentary glitch. And I've learned to get over that. So one of the phrases in this lecture that really hangs people up is the statement that the more spiritually aware person is responsible for the relationship. And I am guilty of having used that phrase as I just said it. And while I have worked through it and found it acceptable and even exciting, on first wave, on first glance, on first hearing, that can feel overwhelming to someone. Great.
Bonnie Parks?
Yes, pardon? I'm sorry, was there a question?
No, I just signed in. Sorry, I'm late.
All right, you're welcome, and we'll have a chat towards the end. Thanks.
Thanks.
So in the phrase, like the way I expressed it, which is incorrect, by the way, that the more spiritually aware person is responsible for the relationship. There is both the gift of saying, if I can see it, I'm responsible to address it. But there's also a sense of burden. Why am I responsible for this relationship? And so when I read the lecture again this time, I noticed a little magic phrase in front of that. And once again, I felt a little ashamed that I had forgotten this phrase. So I'm going to read it as written in the lecture. When people who are of uneven spiritual development are involved with one another, it is always the higher developed person who has the responsibility for the relationship. Now, why is that different from what I said? Because the premise in this statement is that the relationship is uneven. And later, the guide addresses relationships that are even. So the point here is this. If you are in a relationship where you are more spiritually developed than the other person. And that may not be a permanent situation. It may be an hour, a week, a month, a few years. If you are more spiritually aware than the other person, how could they possibly take responsibility for the spiritual growth in the relationship? They are part of the relationship, and they are responsible for having entered into it. But the trick here is that you, I, we, are responsible for going into a relationship with someone who is not able to meet us on a developmental level. I'm trying to choose my words very, very carefully here because I do not wish to make a value judgment against the momentary developmental status of someone else. But there is a reality that if we can see something and the other person cannot see it because they are prejudiced or frightened or overwhelmed with emotion or biased, then the person who can see is responsible for sharing that information or seeing how that dynamic occurs in the relationship. So it's not that you are responsible for the other ever. You are not responsible for the other person. You are only responsible for yourself. But you are responsible for creating a relationship with someone who cannot always meet you on a developmental level. And if you make such a relationship, what the lecture is suggesting is that you accept responsibility for that, that you are a few steps ahead of the other person. It's a little bit like being taller than the other person. So someone who's 6 feet tall can see a little bit further over the hill or over the heads of the crowd. And a person who is 4.5 feet tall may have to depend on the vision of the taller person. It is that simple. Now, there are things a shorter person can do. Spiritually, they can grow up. Physically, we may not be able to do that. They can stand on a soapbox. They can climb a ladder. They can learn to interpret from sounds or information what might be going on. We can use our perceptive abilities to see further than perhaps our physical abilities are. But the sheer fact is that if we create a relationship with someone who is more advanced than we are, there's a reason for that relationship, both on the part of the person who is not as spiritually developed and on the part of the person who is more spiritually developed. So this statement, and I'll read it again, when people who are of uneven spiritual development are involved with one another, it is always the higher developed person who has the responsibility for the relationship. And then the guide says, the lower developed person is not capable of such a self-search. Then there is the case where we have a relationship with someone who is our spiritual equal. And in that case, the guide says that it's not that we are both half responsible for the relationship, but that we are both fully responsible for the relationship. And what I interpret from that, because the guide's not always, the lecture is only 14 pages, it's not 50. What I interpret from that is that since life is never perfect and it's never in complete balance, what happens in relationship is that we go back and forth, that no two people are going to be perfectly developed on the same level at all times, growing at the same rate. So when the guide says when people are equally spiritually developed, he does not mean tit for tat or in perfect balance. But the magic of a relationship is that we assist each other. When we can see, we take responsibility. And when the other person can see, they take responsibility for what they can see. They also take responsibility for sharing with the other and assisting them in their growth process. So I'm going to recap on this because, once again, when we read this lecture, some people hit that phrase and become upset about it. That if you are involved, and I want to use this instead of in the big R relationship, let's consider this on a small R relationship, on, for instance, a relationship with a neighbor. If you have a neighbor who is angry and upset all the time, and you are not angry and upset all the time, that person may bring to you a sense of dualistic thinking. This is wrong, that's wrong, I don't get my way, you're interfering with me, somebody hurt me. Ways of thinking dualistically, because that's why they're angry and upset, because they see the world as us and them and that they're not getting what they need. If you do not see the world that way, then you may be slightly or greatly more spiritually developed than another person. That one of the things you can offer this other person is a lack of personal criticism, support for what they do well, to listen to them without encouraging them, and to find a place perhaps where you can be in relationship and not pollute or enable aspects of their personality or their life that you see as negative. That in this sense, you may be more spiritually developed than the other, and you may need to watch out for the negativities that they ask you to engage in. This is what the guide is talking about when he talks about uneven relationships. But if we talk about, once again, small r, if we talk about a best friend relationship that works, it is more likely that you and your best friend are on a similar level of spiritual development. And sometimes they may feel down and depressed, and they may need support from you. And sometimes you may be down and depressed or angry and not quite understand what's going on, and they may be able to comfort you and give you insight into what might be happening. Or if nothing else, simply support you in your feelings, again, without enabling or colluding with you. That this would be a relationship that would be more even. When we are in relationships where we are always helping the other and the other does not manage to be able to help ourselves, this is what the guide later describes as a relationship that becomes dysfunctional and eventually may need to end. It's not that you can't give all the time, but if you're in an intimate relationship and you are giving your time and effort and you are working on spiritual development and the other person is not, that the chances are the other person is not in a positive state. And at some point there will be some pressure, and that pressure may lead you to not grow yourself. And what the guide says is at that point, the relationship may need to end. It may need to terminate. Not because the other person is wrong, and not because the other person is bad, but because in relationship, if we are not able to grow, eventually the relationship could turn toxic. That are, once again, going back to the beginning, that our memories are of the unitive. Our memories are of God and Spirit. But that's where we want to go. And to be cloistered in a relationship where growth is not possible, or there is so much drama that we cannot work on ourselves, we cannot work on our honesty, we cannot reveal our dishonesty because we're attacked for it, or it is colluded and encouraged to grow instead of encouraged to heal, then we won't be in a place where we can grow. The guide spends a lot of time in the rest of this lecture talking about blame and duality. And I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, because when we talk about relationship, actually it's better to talk about specifics. It's always better to talk about specifics. So at the beginning of this talk, when I chat with people a few minutes before I start the recording, I was expressing that there's a limit to what a presentation of concepts can do. Because the concepts are lovely and they're interesting and you can take them and work with them. But the actual work is in finding the place where you are resistant to the concept, where you are in distortion and unwilling to let go of your distortion, where you are unwilling to be honest and so you simply don't open the subject. That in the personal work is where the concepts, let's use the phrase, the rubber meets the road. So talking about relationship on a conceptual basis is useful as a starting point, but it will never address the reality of an individual relationship. One of the things that I do is I look at ways of expressing ideas of relationship based upon groups, cities, villages, states, nations, and global. So I have become more and more interested in politics in the last year, year and a half, because so much is going on, and there's a lot of, I don't want to call it negativity, I truly don't. There's a lot of struggle in the world today. There are a lot of places where people disagree, and they disagree violently. Whether the violence is physical, whether it is verbal, whether it is violence in terms of I will not give to you until you do this, so I deprive you. We are in a time of stress in our planet. And that by taking the lecture on relationship and overlaying that onto the global situation, the political situation, that's about the only way I can work in open presentation because I don't have the personal details of people's lives. So I want to pause because I don't really want to go there right now, but what I'm expressing is that you can take the lecture on relationships and you can make it a macro, you can magnify it to look at the human condition overall. But in the human condition overall, we may feel overwhelmed. There's not much an individual can seem to do about the planet. And so, again, the Patrick lectures are keyed specifically to personal development, to personal growth. And what the guide says at the end of this lecture is that when you grow personally, when you develop yourself onto a very personal level, you influence the world. You influence your family. You influence your community. You influence, to some degree, the entire planet. And the guide says that over and over in the lectures. I tease that sometimes he changes the proportion. That sometimes the guide will say one good deed is 10 times stronger than negativity. And another time he'll say one good deed, one good thought, one positive interaction is worth 50 times. And the proportion keeps changing. And I think the proportion keeps changing because this is not a tit for tat. This is not something finite, but more a description that by developing yourself, by developing your ability to love, your ability to be honest and open, by bringing peace and support to your family and your relationship, we heal the planet. And to some degree, it requires a great deal of faith to not want to go out and fix other things and only sit at home, and I'm exaggerating, only sit at home and work on ourselves. This, you don't have to choose. It doesn't have to be an either or. But if we are in distortion in ourselves, as we go out in the world, we will manifest that distortion. And so the work we do on a personal, intimate level with ourselves and the work that we do on a personal, intimate level with another person will manifest that growth out into the world. Whether or not you have a high-powered political job, whether or not you have a community position, even if you are simply a bureaucrat in an office, that by doing your part in the scheme of things, with more honesty, more openness, and more love, you bring honesty, openness, and love to all of us. And that's where I try to balance out the big R, the intimate relationship, and the little R, the small relationship. So every single relationship matters. And different people are in different stages. They're going along, and some people are in personal relationships with another person, and other people are not. And it's important to understand that we're still in relationship, that we still have opportunity. And it actually can be an even greater opportunity because we may not feel as intensely challenged by interactions with our neighbors and our coworkers and family members as we might in an intimate relationship. I want to pause for a second and ask if, number one, there are any questions, and secondly, to ask if there are any areas of this lecture that you'd like me to go into, because on a joke level, to some extent, I've kind of covered it, and there are a few areas I can go into a bit more deeply. But I'd love to hear from you if there's anything specific. Pausing.
Jen, this is Lou.
Mm-hmm.
The guide says that those distortions that we can look at on any relationship, that a lot of times we're looking at where we're looking to dependency on the perfection of the other party.
Mm-hmm.
Like we still project on other people what our own problems are in relating.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, to me at least, it seems that exercise can be done with any relationship. If anything, like if you work in any, if you walk into any professional environment, there's so much of that going on. It's like, oh, this work would be great if everybody else didn't suck. Or, you know, our lives are so ripe with opportunities for that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So what you're reflecting in the lecture, the phrase is that relationship is the greatest mirror for us.
Mm-hmm.
Of who we are. But the trick is that if we are interacting with coworkers on levels that are less intense and less personal, it is easier to dodge the bullet. And when we are interacting with someone who has a larger factor in our emotional reality, that distortion, for instance, it's a princess and the pea kind of thing. So a grain of sand in your eye is going to be a lot more irritating and cause a lot more consternation and reaction than a grain of sand in your fingernail or on your hand or in the crease of your knee or between your toes. So that's the distinction the guide makes. It's not that that grain of sand isn't available and possible for you to see and work on. And it may be that you need a little distance to work on it. It may be a very, very sensitive area. And you may need a little distance so that you don't become overreactive about it. And if it is a true distortion of your being, it will appear in many, many different places. But when that grain of sand is in your eye, when you come home, I'm going to use a standard situation. And there are so many lifestyles now that this doesn't work for a lot of people, but it's the best I can do. You come home at night from a long, hard day of interacting with the world, and you have a feeling of, ah, I'm home, I'm safe, I'm secure. When the grain of sand hits your eye in that moment, you can become enraged. And that grain of sand can look like your desire to be a little selfish because you feel like you've been selfless during the day. You come home and you say, it's my turn. I want attention. I want things done my way. I want my television program. I want my choice of what to eat. And I want my needs addressed. But in an intimate relationship, there's this other person. and the other person is never going to be in exactly the same place. And where the analogy to the grain of sand in your eye comes in is when they've had a fabulous day and they're percolating and they're happy and they want to go out and they want to, they're in a completely different space from you, not because they're not at a spiritual level that you are. They've simply had a different experience during the day. So their idea of relaxing or debriefing or moving the energy through them is going to want to take a different path than your relaxation process might be. And that's the place where we may snap at someone and say the equivalent of, damn it, I'm looking forward to a quiet evening. And the other person basically might respond, damn it, I wanted to go out. I want to have a good time and interact with people because I'm joyous and I want to share it. That in that moment, there is an opportunity for you to see where you may have overextended yourself during the day. You may have been too selfless, which may not be true to who you are. And so in the contraction, in the wanting to find a nice, healing, loving space, you are compensating from an overextension with a contraction. If you can understand that about yourself, if you can communicate that to your partner, then the wonderful aspect of a deep and loving relationship is that it's very likely the other person can say, oh, and negotiation can begin. And you consider the possibility, well, do you want to go out by yourself and I'll just spend a quiet evening at home? Or the other person may actually be able to say, oh, I understand. How about if we talk about it? How about if we share? I'll share my joyous feelings, and you can share your contraction feelings, but it's still sharing. The difference here would be that in one place you don't realize that you're in contraction. Okay? That's the distinction. That's what this lecture is talking about. That in relationship, these moments of pain are opportunities for you to see that something's not right. Now, I don't have the quote right here in front of me, but I'm going to use what I do have. And that is when the guide talks about blame, he phrases it as, you are doing it to me. In the example that I just gave, there is a very light level of blame. For the person who's in contraction sees the other person in a state of expansion and basically says, you're not being loving to me. And that to some degree is blame. And that to some degree is asking the other person to be responsible for you by saying, you must meet my mood, or you must approve of me, or you must support me no matter where I am. We're not taking responsibility for the fact that we may be in distortion. I'm talking about this on an extremely subtle level. I'm not talking about coming home and being hit by someone. I'm not talking about coming home and finding that they just robbed a bank and they want you to go on the road with them to avoid the police. Those are almost easy.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking about a place where the minor irritations of everyday life are opportunities for you to see where you are not in balance, to admit it, to look for understanding in the other person, or to communicate to that other person so that they can meet you. My experience is that we don't actually demand that someone meet us. We don't demand you be exactly as happy as I am. But that's not what we're asking for. We are asking for a bit of allowance for not being in the same place, to be seen in our needs, and perhaps for having a little negotiation made. so that we get a little bit of latitude, but we also give some latitude to the other person. This is where growth can happen, in the most generous and loving of relationships, on an almost microscopic level. And it's not easy to see this sometimes. It's easy to blow this off and say, they're a wonderful person, but they don't do this right. Well, it is in that place, that very place where it doesn't work, that's the growth place. The other places are healed and wonderful and they work fine. There's no particular reason to work there. But in the places of consternation, in the places of pain, in the places where we feel not loved, the guide suggests that we look inside. What is this thing about not being loved? What would love look like? What are your needs? Have they been expressed? And I want to go back for just one second to touch into, if you have created a relationship with someone who is not able to hear you, and that is what I think is meant by uneven spiritual development. Let's simplify it and say the other person is simply not sensitive to some issues. They have not developed a sensitivity to some issues. When you need support there, they can't meet you. And at that point, you're going to have to some degree, take care of yourself. And you may wish to work with the other person on helping them create more sensitivity in that area. But if they don't have it now, you can't demand it now. And on some level, it's important to take responsibility for the fact that you accepted this person into your life, and they are not completely at your level on all in all areas. So I want to take a break for a moment and change tapes.